that you need to work with somebody who has exact experience doing the steps out of the Big Book, especially around this step. You're going to have some kind of experience, but it can be very dangerous not to do that. There's a big tendency for people to return to addiction in steps 4 and steps 9. So working closely with the sponsor is critical, and I can't emphasize that enough. Somebody with exact experience of doing the steps out of the Big Book. If anybody's interested in actually doing this process, but it will change your life, you know, and especially this step here, you know, a lot of people have fear about it, but it's actually one of the easier steps to do, really. Because it's very mechanical, it doesn't feel great. You will be challenged. And, you know, basically, the guy who first took me through this, he said, "You are going to feel pain, and you know, you're not going to die." You know, and he moved me through that. So, I'm going to introduce Miriam here, and I'm going to let her share her experience with us. Thanks.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Miriam, and I am a compulsive overeater in recovery.
Hi, Miriam.
Hi. So, you know, I always like to go back to the book, and in the section of the big, in the fourth step section of the Big Book, I love the part where it says, "When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically." So mental and physical recovery comes after the spiritual malady is overcome, and the spiritual malady is addressed by doing these steps. I've done a lot of fourth steps, and you know, the first few that I did were not from the Big Book, and I've done them a lot of different ways. And after I'd been in the program for, oh gosh, a long time. I don't know, a long time. And I was absent for a long time. Thanks. I was in the rooms, and I was abstinent, and I was really unhappy. And I met Kevin, and I heard, like, freedom in a way that I hadn't heard it before. And I asked how he was doing that, and he told me about a group of people who were taking the steps as laid out in the Big Book, and I was blessed to get to join them. And this was actually a group of alcoholics, and they let me join them, and it really changed my life. And I started going through the process as laid out in the Big Book. I found doing the four-column format the most helpful, the simplest of all of the different fourth steps I've done, and I just want to share, you know, the part about you're not being afraid. I mean, I think there's so much talk in the rooms about the fourth step, and oh my God, and it's this big deal. And looking at these forms can be pretty intimidating too. You know, I also want to emphasize it was necessary. It's always been necessary for me to do this with a sponsor. You know, don't go into the Big Book alone. I mean, you can read it by yourself, but I needed a teacher, you know, someone who had done it herself, who could show me exactly how to do it and stayed with me. I've also heard people say, "Oh, I don't need to do a fourth step because I've been in therapy." I've been in therapy since I was 17. I still needed to do a fourth step because therapy told me all kinds of things about why I did what I did and whatever, but it was all, I'm not going to put down therapy. Therapy's a good thing. When I did the fourth step, I learned about my part. I learned about what I was doing over and over to cause my own problems. And no amount of delving into, you know, my father and all that stuff would do what this did to bring me back to me. Perfectionism. Perfectionism is one of my defects of character, and it popped up when I was doing the fourth step. When I had a whole lot of resentments too. I had 64 different resentments just against my husband, who's now my ex-husband. And the four-step helped me to get from husband to ex-husband, which was a good thing. So perfectionism. So I was really, really hung up on doing it exactly right. And I wrote and I wrote and I wrote and I wrote and I wrote. And I actually ended up starting my fifth step before I finished my fourth step. I did my fifth step, which is, you know, sharing it with God, with another human being, and admitting it to yourself. I did that. I started working with my sponsor on the fifth step because I was in so much pain from the fourth step, and I just needed to start sharing it. And I had a lot of trouble figuring out what my part was, that fourth column in some of those things. So she helped me through it, and I will always be grateful for her. I'm jumping around, back to the book, where it says resentment is the number one offender. It was shared with me that resentment comes from the word to mean feel, so it's to re-feel something. So resentment is to re-feel it over and over and over again. I remember being at a workshop where Howard was talking about resentments, and he said that someone would do him a wrong, and it was as if he had a tape player, and he recorded that wrong. And every night, he would go and he would press rewind, and then he would press play again, and he would replay that resentment over and over and over. So that person had the power to wrong him over and over and over again. And that's what my resentments did, because it's not like, you know, the thing happened once. The harm happened once, but the resentment is what I did, is that I would re-feel it over and over and over again. And so, when I went through this process, I looked at, you know, what did it affect in me, and then eventually what was my part. And then I was able to take my part and bring it to God. I find that pretty much my fourth column always, fear and approval seeking are constantly at the root of all my resentments, because always, you know, you did this, really, you didn't give me what I wanted, and it was really because you didn't give me the strokes I needed, and so it's always about bringing that to God. You know, I've been praying for many years for my fear and my approval seeking to be lifted, and in bits and pieces it's being lifted, not as quickly as I'd like, but it's really helpful to have this process, because I can see it each time you wrong me. Oh yeah, it's about me and my approval seeking once again. Some of the fear around some of this stuff is, you know, the fear of having to share it, and I know that that's fifth step, but I just need to say that in doing it, I found that nothing I did was so horrible that, like, I thought, oh my God, I've got all these secrets, and how can I share this with anybody? But I found when I shared this stuff with my sponsors, they all told me they had done, you know, what I had done and worse. So it leveled the playing field. So that was just a really good thing to know. I use the fourth step in my life on a regular basis. Like, I've done a bunch of huge four steps, and then I do mini fourth steps on, you know, specific incidents. And and as I said, I mean, I wrote fourth step after fourth step on my husband. Until eventually, you know, I was able to get clear enough, and that was what, you know, led me to know that I needed to move on. And I've done the same thing with other relationships, and by doing that, it's led me to other programs, because I've seen, you know, my patterns over and over, and I realized it really wasn't about them, it was what I keep doing. This isn't a good place to end, but I do want to say that this hasn't been everything for me. The fourth step out of Big Book is a fabulous tool, and in some ways it's helped me to be rid of resentments, but there are some things that it hasn't taken away. It hasn't addressed all the rage, and I've needed to do that in therapy, and it says in the Big Book that we, you know, that we're encouraged to use whatever extra help is available, if it's medical help or whatever. And so you know, so I get that this helps me on an intellectual level. There's sort of something a little different on an emotional level. But overall, I'm very, very grateful for this process. And I guess the one thing I want to say about doing it, it's written somewhere, you know, and you've heard, you know, anything worth doing is worth doing well. Anything worth doing is worth doing poorly. You know, it's okay to do this poorly, just to do it. And then, you know, you get to do it over and over again. So thanks for listening.
Thank you, Marilyn.
I'd like to add a thought. A friend and I read Big Book every morning. I'm Margaret, compulsive eater. And we started last year while she was in relapse, and she has a good streak of abstinence and recovery going now. And I like to think that little time we spend every morning with the Big Book might have helped. And yesterday we finished the last of page 164 and said, what shall we do next? Let's read the stories. So the saga continues. And as long as I've been in program, I've always had someone other than a sponsor that I do literature with every day, or sometimes three times a week. But my favorite thing is to spend time in the Big Book. Doesn't matter if you read a page or a paragraph, but it's nice to get somebody else's input, what they're getting out of it. I've seen some study groups form in OA where people will come 45 minutes to an hour before the meeting and get together and discuss the Big Book, give each other assignments, write on it, come back the following week. There are so many ways to incorporate this piece of literature in our lives and to make it part of how the programs work daily, other than just going to a once-a-week Big Book meeting and hearing how somebody's week went. Thank you.
I just wanted to go over this piece. I was kind of humming and hawing about, like, Margaret was saying, you know, you need to bring handouts, kind of. Like, people like handouts. And I was, humming and hawing about this because I didn't really feel, really what I should do. But what I did is I did do a little outline here, and I think Margaret printed up some copies, so I'm just going to refer to that now real quickly here, you know. And, this basically just went through the chapter real quickly, you know. And, there's a need to do fourth step inventory because it's the next logical progression, and it's actually... again, like we were talking about last week, it's meaningless to make a decision unless you're going to put action into it right away, you know. And, you know, the idea behind that was when you get on the, you've taken a third step, you're on the rocket ship, and it's, you know, it's 3-2-1, and you're off, and it's like you're along for the ride now. It's perilous to stop, or think you can delay this. It needs to continue to move on. Move on through the process. So anyway, resentment is the number one offender for us. Just to get back it up, the three manifestations of self are, for our context coming out of this book, are resentments, fears, and sex and harms. So that really kind of boils it down for us here, and these are the areas they're going to concentrate on. And again, this is not the only way, but there's been proven success. There's a proven track record here of many persons who have done this and have gotten freedom from their lives, real freedom in their lives. So Miriam referred to this passage in the book. You know, once the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically, you know. That really did not sit well for me for a long time when I first heard that, because it was like, well, does that mean I don't have to be abstinent? No, it doesn't. It doesn't mean that, but it just is, you know, it really puts it, the idea is that this is a spiritual malady. It has a emotional and physical component to it. But we really need to, you know, but this is why, this is, you know, there's something wrong with us. We're in this constant, unnatural state of, despite whether we're, not using the substance, you know, and it's, so that's, you know, that needs to be addressed, you know, it's not enough for me just to, you know, be absent and come to meetings, that's not going to cut it, you know, I'm missing the boat, you know, my, you know, my, the story of my dad was, so he was in this program, he came to it in 1965 and got sober and did the steps at the big book and had this spiritual experience and changed. And then he stopped growing spiritually. He failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life. And that, according to this book and this method, is the only reason that I have found that why we return to addiction. Fail to perfect and enlarge the spiritual life. So far, that's the only reason that I've really found. And he became a miserable, horrible person and wasn't drinking. But he was like out of his mind and wreaked havoc and undue, untold harms to people that are still occurring. He's been dead 20 years and are still affecting my family members. Spiritual malady comes from beyond the grave. It's pretty spooky kind of stuff. Anyway, moving along here. You know, we a grudge list. How far do we go back with our grudge list? As far as you can remember. You know, resentments. Miriam referred to it here again, to refeel, you know, and it's just like, that's the way that I found that that's just the way that I was reinforcing those resentments, keeping them going. I don't know about anybody else, but I loved the high I got off of being pissed off. I lived off of it. It was my life force. And I was miserable. There's a horrible price to pay for that. Horrible. You know. anyway, you know, then it goes moving along here, going on. What areas of my life are affected, you know? And where did I become, you know, interfered with, threatened, or harmed, in my opinion, you know? You know, and, you know, I really like this, the grouch and the brainstorm. Well, you know, we pretty much all know what a grouch is, and but a brainstorm was always seen something that was like a positive attribute. And, you know, and anybody could go look it up in the Merriam's dictionary, but this was what they meant by the Webster's dictionary, and they are, the term used here for brainstorm is a violent transient fit of insanity. And that was like, whoa, well, I fit that one, you know, because that was me. All right, so, you know, and then again, you know, it's talking about looking at things from a different angle, you know, take, you know, and Chris gave some really great examples of that, you know, really asking God to come into our lives and show us in our heart, you know, that things are, we're different. You know, I had an instance come up this week, which was really kind of humorous now, but I can still get really controlling, and I have a propensity for this to occur while I'm working, and you know, it's like I got this job, and it's like, okay, I got to do like three things at once here, and I got to have several conversations at one time, and and I hate doing it. I just hate doing that. And because I become, you know, and I shouldn't say that. I said, the end result is I do that, and I, you know, and I'm just like barking orders. And this person just was sitting there for about 45 minutes listening to me, and she was like, she started barking at me, and she said, you're being rude to me, and, I was like, okay, and I thought about it for a while, and I came back the next day, and she goes, are you going to apologize for being rude to me? And I was like, you know what, I'm really at a loss here, because I don't see it yet, and so I went home, wrote it out, and called up a few people and talked about it, and you know, you piece it together when you get some perspective on it. And that's the great thing, you know, the thing about resentments is like we just get dug in, you know, we're just like, we're in the trench, and we're not coming out, you don't understand,
I'm right. Even when I'm wrong, I'm right. You know, it's that we're just dug in, you know. And, you know, I have these really preconceived, you know, ideas, preconceived judgments, these prejudices going on. And it's just like, it doesn't matter what, you know, I had all this, you know, all this stuff with this particular thing going on, that I knew exactly what was going on here, and it was just like, you go make amends for, you know, and that's what I did, you know, just go, I was rude, I am sorry. And she's like, yeah, okay, now we can be friends again, you idiot. You know? So it was, you know, so this is very easy, good, practical application in our lives, you know. Fears are very simple, you know, and it's a very simple thing here, but the great thing is just to discover the fear, trace it back. What was very interesting was to see how I was forwarding that fear, how I was promoting that fear and moving it forward. Even more so, after writing a lot of these inventories, I found that fear was so dominant. I mean, Marion had mentioned it about the approval of others and fear being so primal in her, you know, really at the base. And, you know, fear is the last thing on our, resentment inventory for a reason, because I found, at least in my case, that's what every resentment I had is about. It's about fear, you know? I open my eyes in the morning and I'm afraid. You know, I start getting self-seeking, dishonest, and selfish. Areas of my life become affected. I begin to put a name on it, you know, some kind of cause or something. And then I'm out there looking for somebody to put it on or something to put it on, you know. And it did occur a lot that way for me, you know. So, you know, and then this process that I learned in having this relationship with God became more prominent when I, you know, actively began to use prayer in my life and saying a fear prayer and, you know, becoming less self-reliant and more God-reliant. And that's what that fourth part of that, you know, the prayer is, you know, God, demonstrate through me what you can do, remove my fear, whatever the fear is, and direct my attention to what you have me be. So I had knew what the fear was, knew where it came from, saw how I kept it going, saw how I kept the self-reliance going, and the direct my attention part, which was, you know, that fourth column, that's actually what I began to practice in my life. So there was actually practical application. And this, like, you know, the fear would come up 100 times a day, and I'd say the prayer, and I'd look to where God wanted my, you know, my attention directed. I used to walk around with 3x5 cards with the prayer on it and the fear, and on this side it had that, you know, the fear prayer, and then the other side it had the direct my attention to, so I know, like, this is the behavior I want to aspire towards, that I want to start moving towards. Practical application. You know, you do that for like 6 months and you're going to change. And that's what occurred with me, you know. And that, you know, prayer becomes very integral part about this here with doing this step. You know, sex and harms inventory, you know, and you know, in some instances we're talking about actual specific sex conduct. In other instances we're talking about relationships that you know, have been there have been things committed or omitted, and then just harms where there's things that we've done that are, there's no resentment connected to it. You know, we were just did something awful, you know, or like, you know, we stole money or whatever, those kind of things. And then there's just, basically there is these questions that were answered. For me, it was just put out there, there were 10 questions, you know, where was I, you know, where was I selfish, where was I dishonest, blah, 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 blah. And it was very mechanical, actually. It was just kind of fill in the blank after a while, you know, really, to get this done, you know, and get through these parts here. But it was very important in this to see that nobody is the arbitrator. I'm not the arbitrator of anybody's sex life, you know. And that was very good. And I had some very kind and loving people around me that really helped reinforce that, you know. So I could really dig up and see what it was, just to see what it was. This is like, you know, fact-facing and fact-finding process, you know. you know, and then moving beyond that. Sex ideal was a very good thing to do. Anytime I write inventory now, I always write a new sex ideal or relationship ideal. I've done this for other things too in areas of my life. You know, I've applied it to work and so forth. All right. It's got to be something that I can work towards, and it's got to be something that's realistic for me that I know I can do. The last part of this is the promises of the fourth step here, you know, and these things I think are really important to understand because it gives us a measuring stick for how far we've come with this and how well we have done this process, you know. Listed and analyzed, you know, resentments, fears and harms, you know, comprehend their futility and their fatality. Seeing how these things will kill me if I'm re-feeling things over and over and over and over and over again for years and years and years, you know, that's going to drive me mad to the point of often thinking about myself, you know, which was exactly where I was at a point here. Understanding their destructiveness, learning patience, tolerance, and goodwill towards their enemies and other people, you know, by learning to pray for them, by learning to be, you know, take things from a different angle, you know, learning, you know, some patience, kindliness, and tolerance, you know, and I did find what God was doing for myself, what I couldn't do for God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Listed people we had harmed and became willing to make amends. You know, yeah, we got you here on the fourth step. Yeah, it is about you are going to have to make amends to people. You know, and you start making this list here in our inventory, you know. But, you know, some people use that as an excuse, like, you know, I can't do this because I can't make amends to these people. And, you know, the thing is that God is taking me through this process, and my sponsor is helping guide me. And it's never going to turn out the way I want it to. And it's because if I'm really letting God come in and work through me, it's going to be a spiritual experience, and I'm going to be taken care of. I really am going to be taken care of. And God really does this, you know. And so, you know, worrying about making amends or trying to think that that's some kind of excuse is that, you know, you're not going to be making the amends. You're going to be asking your higher power to help you make those amends. So you'll be taken care of. And it's not something to be too concerned about. And let me just end with this one point here about this. I was really angry at God, and I'm in the middle of writing first inventory, and had this really horrible thing happen to me. I had this big physical trauma, and my whole life changed, and blah, blah, blah. And I was going to church at the time, and I just had this dramatic moment, and I'm on right after Mass on Sunday morning, and I just, like, lost it on the front steps of the church, and then I'm not coming to your house anymore, and I'm not listening to you anymore, and I'm not talking to you anymore. And I went home and slammed the door and didn't come out for 6 months, you know. And the response was from my higher power, who so dearly loved me and continued to take care of me. It's like, that's nice. I'm God, and we're going to do this my way anyway. And I was very taken care of because people came over when I didn't want to come out because I was so upset and angry. And people, you know, took care of, people took me out, and, you know, people called me, and, you know, so it was amazing the way that whole process went down. So, very incredible process here. Encourage people to have the experience, I think we're done here, so we want to join us all. Oh, thank again the Red Bank meeting for allowing us to continue this. We are going to move on to steps 5 through 7 next week with our speakers, and we're going to close the meeting with Roseanne's prayer. Yeah.
You want to put these out, please, somebody? We had a half the room was quiet last
night.
I'm on the chair.
Would you like to hold on?
Come on, Janice, you're holding us up.
All right, I put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we can never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend on our own standing willpower. We're all together now, reaching out our hands for a power of strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. Keep coming back. It works when you work it, one day at a time. So work it. You're worth it. Give a lot of love and don't pick up.
Quick announcement.